Good afternoon. My name is Alexis, and on behalf of my research partners, it's my pleasure to present data from one of the first studies to look at PrEP acceptability among persons, active persons who inject drugs in the United States. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the participants, collaborators, and funders without whom this study would have been impossible. So here's just a bit of background. Globally, syringe exchange programs have dramatically reduced HIV among persons who inject drugs. And while this is also true in the United States, the effectiveness of this intervention is limited by federal and state laws which ban funding exchanges or prohibit the operation of exchanges in areas of high need. These laws exacerbate vulnerability, and persons who inject drugs in the United States continue to be disproportionately burdened with HIV. They account for only 3% of U.S. adults, but nearly 10% of new HIV infections in the U.S. It's also important to note that there are stark racial and ethnic disparities among persons who inject drugs, and we'll likely see the new shifts in populations that are impacted among injectors as the opioid epidemic shifts to impact more women, younger folks, and persons in the suburbs, et cetera. Pre-exposure prophylaxis has promised for preventing HIV among injectors. The Bangkok-tenofovir trial is the only PWID-specific PrEP clinical trial, but it demonstrated 49% reduction in incident HIV cases overall and 74% efficacy among persons with high adherence. For these reasons, in 2014, the CDC recommended PrEP as one of several HIV prevention strategies for persons who inject drugs. However, little research has focused on PrEP among this population. The goal of this study was to begin to fill the gap in evidence by exploring the willingness of and potential barriers to PrEP among syringe exchange users in the northeastern United States, which is one of the homes for the purest and cheapest heroin in our country. The specific objectives of the study were to first estimate the proportion of persons who inject drugs accessing a syringe exchange program who would qualify for PrEP based on current clinical guidelines from the CDC, and second, to assess syringe exchange users' attitudes and barriers towards PrEP uptake. The study was set in Camden, New Jersey, which is about 8 miles away from Philadelphia City Center across the Delaware River. While Camden has only 1% of New Jersey's population and it represents a place of less than 9 square miles, they have the second and highest rates of chlamydia and gonorrhea in New Jersey, as well as the 9th highest HIV rate, which indicates this is a place where intervention is needed. The study was conducted in partnership with Camden Area Health Education Center, who's funded by the New Jersey Department of Health to conduct a twice-weekly mobile van-based syringe exchange, which served up to and over 1,100 unduplicated clients last year. So participants were English-speaking syringe exchange clients who were over the age of 18 who reported that they had injected drugs within the previous 30 days and also reported that they engaged in anal or vaginal sex in the last 30 days. They read information about PrEP that was adapted from the CDC and completed a self-administered electronic survey assessing various behavioral risk factors associated with HIV acquisition and PrEP eligibility. And then they self-collected specimen for gonorrhea and chlamydia diagnosis via nucleic acid amplification testing and received a $20 gift card for completing the survey. So PrEP eligibility was calculated using the current CDC clinical guidelines. This is a table I'm sure most of us are familiar with that outlines guidance for PrEP use by population. For this study, we assessed all of the items pictured using either a yes-no or enumeration responses with a 6-month recall period. We then created a composite score for PrEP eligibility by adding affirmative responses to current or recent STI, having sex with a person of known HIV status or unknown HIV status, inconsistent condom use with more than the median number of sex partners within the sample by gender, same-sex sexual behavior with men, as well as syringe sharing and receiving drug treatment. We then dichotomized the scores as either eligible versus ineligible and used descriptive statistics, Whitney Mann U and chi-square, to both explain the sample and look for differences in distributions of covariates. So here's a picture of our sample. The median age was 32. Most of the folks were white, identified as straight, were homeless, and had a high school education and lived well below the federal poverty guidelines. The sample is consistent with the sample that's served by the syringe exchange in Camden. So the fun stuff. Participants reported a variety of high-risk sexual and syringe-sharing behaviors associated with HIV acquisition. However, women were statistically more likely than men to report exchanging sex for drugs or money, or having sex with someone living with HIV or unknown HIV status. Though it's not pictured, women's median number of sex partners was significantly higher than men's. They had a median number of 5 sex partners in 6 months, whereas men had a median number of 2. Both groups frequently reported inconsistent condom use, and the sample's sexual behavior is consistent with STI risk, which was borne out by the data, with 23% of women and 8% of men screening positive for an STI. Syringe sharing and syringe mediated backloading or piggybacking were highly correlated, so we combined those two responses into one injection risk variable. With regards to parenteral exposures, about half of women and half of men reported syringe sharing within the last 6 months, which is important to note given that these people were recruited from a syringe exchange. And then participation in methadone and other opioid substitution programs was fairly low and not significantly different between women or men. Overall, 86% of women and 70% of men recruited from the syringe exchange would be considered eligible for PrEP given the current clinical guidelines. And while we see a difference between women and men that's statistically significant, it's probably not clinically significant. We're talking about a really high proportion of eligibility. Willingness was also quite high, with 90% of women and 71% of men indicating that they'd be willing to take PrEP. They also, the majority, said they'd be willing to pay a $20 a month copay, that they'd be willing to persist on medications despite encountering mild side effects, and that they were willing to undergo quarterly HIV screening. Despite the acceptability of PrEP, they did face quite a few barriers to PrEP uptake, retention in PrEP, and adherence, including anxiety about PrEP, being embarrassed about PrEP, potentially not wanting a sexual partner to know that they were taking PrEP. Many had not seen a primary care provider or other physicians where they might be able to access a PrEP prescription. Over a third were uninsured, and again, many had severe drug dependence, which would limit potentially their ability to adhere to their PrEP medications. And then there was also reporting of wanting to share PrEP with others who might need it more, or willingness to sell PrEP to others who might need it more. Little PrEP research is focused on active injection drug users in the U.S. However, this small study begins to paint a picture of why we might want to broaden our focus to include persons who inject drugs in national conversations about PrEP. I'll summarize with just a couple of reasons justifying this shift. Many syringe exchange users meet the CDC's highest risk eligibility criteria for PrEP and also found the concept acceptable. Despite this, they face several challenges to PrEP uptake, retention, and adherence. Because of their integration into injection drug communities, SEPs could play a key role in providing those highest risk clients with PrEP education and ensuring linkages to care. I think it's important to note here, because it's a sexual health crowd, that syringes and condoms are not the same. That every time an injector uses, they want to have a clean needle. And so they go back to the syringe exchange. They're going there as often as they can to get them as many syringes as they can. And so this is a great opportunity for us to capitalize on what is sort of a captive audience. Beyond that, I think it's important to note that targeted efforts for PrEP and women injectors may be warranted. We saw women were fourfold more likely to screen for STI, and we all know that STI are a biomarker for HIV risk. It's important to note the limitations of this data. First and foremost, sexual behavior was an inclusion criteria, so had we just taken all comers at the SEP, we may have not have inflated our PrEP eligibility as much. We didn't assess PrEP knowledge prior to giving them information about PrEP, so I can't speak to what injectors currently know about PrEP, but there are data such as those from the CDC's National HIV Behavioral Surveillance Survey that we could take a look at to answer those questions. And then it's important to note that these data represent an urban population, and as such, it may be different in other settings that are more rural. So in conclusion, I'd like to make take my time to make a couple of editorial comments. So injection, these are people who were recruited from a syringe exchange, and it's important to note that injection risk is persisting despite their engagement in these services. In Camden, this is likely due to underfunding and the fact that people are limited the amount of syringes that they can get. There, people can get 10 syringes if they're not giving anything back, and up to 20 if they're coming in with something to exchange. Our sample was injecting up to 4 times a day. It's not enough. Secondly, the sexual risk of injectors, I think, has largely been excluded from conversations about HIV risk in this population. We're seeing incredibly high rates of STI, inconsistent condom use, and high rates of sex exchange. Not only could this lead to bridging to lower risk populations, but it's also potentially leading to sexual acquisition of HIV, even though we're potentially attending to the injection drug risks of these groups. And then, these data beg the question, should injectors be a group whose sexual health is on our national radar? Should they be considered part of our sentinel surveillance populations? We have STI guidelines for a whole host of at-risk populations. And these data, though they're tiny, begin to paint the picture of why additional data would be needed to sort of see whether we should be making more targeted efforts for this group. So this is me. And I thank you for your time, and I look forward to answering any questions, and my community-based partner will be at my poster tomorrow, so if any of you guys would like to talk to her and her experience implementing this project, we'd both be delighted to speak with you.
Thank you. So we're a bit short on time, but I'll ask one quick question, which is, are there any next steps for this particular CBO around PrEP referrals or PrEP education their clients?
Yeah, so there are next steps, not for this CBO, but one in Philadelphia. So we're going to be implementing a small-scale PrEP implementation study for women who inject drugs in conjunction with 2 community-based organizations in Philly. So hopefully the next time I see you, I'll be able to report back on that feasibility trial. Okay. Thanks.